Welcome to Psych Minds and Behavior Change with me, your host, Nicole Plumridge. Do you wonder why people behave the way that they do? Does human behavior baffle you? Well, I'm a board-certified behavior analyst and have worked in the Applied Behavior Analysis field, or ABA, for the past 10 years. While my work has mainly been with individuals with learning difficulties, autism, behavioral challenges, the principles of behavior relate to everyone. So if you're interested in cultivating a deeper understanding of human behavior, just keep listening. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Psych Minds and Behavior Change. I hope everyone has been having a lovely summer so far. I certainly have. My son and I have been spending some quality time with my sister and her children in England, which has been great. The cousins have been getting along so well together and playing so nicely, so that's been really nice. I wish they could do that more often, do it on a regular basis, not just a summer thing, but it is what it is. I will say, though, that being in a household with four children under the age of 6 years old does come with its challenges, but that's a topic for another day. Anyway, I was thinking about the podcast and the direction that I wanted to take it in, because I wasn't too convinced of the direction that it's going in now. I've been feeling that it's a bit too technical, and it could be more interesting if it was a bit more story-based. So I had an idea when I was out walking, which for me is definitely when I get the most kind of creative ideas and inspiration. That actually reminds me of a saying that goes something like, motion creates emotion, which I guess is also true and can translate to things like inspiration and ideas. So anyway, I digress. Back to the podcast and what to expect from it from here on out. I'm still pretty new to podcasting territory and figuring things out. I do want to make these episodes a little more personal and relatable when it comes to the more technical topics within applied behavior analysis, or ABA, which is what this podcast is ultimately about. While learning the technical information is important and necessary if you want to work in the field, I also want to make the content understandable and applicable to real-life scenarios, because I feel that when things are explained in the context of stories and examples, the information just sticks better. So we'll still be talking about ABA and behavior change, but I'm planning for it to be in the context of real-life scenarios and typically things that I'm either currently going through right now in my life or have experienced in the past. So in that way, I believe that the podcast can appeal to anyone who is interested in the general topic that I'll be talking about, as well as ABA therapists, caregivers, and professionals in the field of behavior analysis. So today we're going to be talking all about habit formation from an applied behavior analytic perspective. And I'm going to talk about this in the context of a habit that I want to develop, and that habit is writing daily. So a little bit of background about myself and my personality. In general, I would say that I'm quite an inconsistent person with inconsistent energy levels. I have passion projects and big ideas which I fall in love with. I pour all my energy into them, but once I get even a little bit bored, I just drop the projects, or I simply feel that I don't have the energy to maintain them. So this is something that I want to change, especially because you keep hearing in the entrepreneurial world that consistency is everything and it's the key to success. So posting content according to a schedule, showing up regularly, updating your platform daily is all necessary according to the productivity gurus that I listen to anyway. So this is something I definitely don't do. I tend to work on things when the feeling strikes and then I just drop them when it doesn't. Now, how can I tie this into writing and ABA? First off, I love writing. It's been a hobby of mine for years and years. But I want to transform that hobby into a habit. So I already have an okay track record with writing since I've actually published two books. They are gothic fiction novels, so very different from the content I talk about here. And they are currently part of a dark duology, which I hope to expand into a trilogy next year. But my motivation to write is currently at an all-time low. I even had a hard time outlining the script for this podcast that I'm recording. Even though I don't script what I'm going to write word for word, I do have a general outline and bullet points, and I didn't even want to write that. Although I've really been missing podcasting because I've been on holiday, so I haven't had the time to do it, to write the scripts and record. So even though the motivation to get the podcast episode out was there, the writing behind it wasn't. Like I said, I have a duology available on Amazon, I write podcast scripts, I write poetry for myself, and I sometimes write short stories and poems to submit to contests. I used to publish articles over on PsychMind's website, but I haven't done that in quite a while. I have goals to write nonfiction books about ABA, possibly a children's book about autism acceptance, but I haven't even got around to thinking about those last couple of goals. So with all this love and passion for writing, you would expect me to be able to easily cultivate this into a regular habit, but I can't. Sometimes it will go weeks or even months, or even in the past years, between my writing projects. So let's look into some ABA explanations as to why this could be the case. So the schedule of reinforcement is way too delayed. Schedules of reinforcement are how often you're rewarded for a task or work activity that you do. In the clinical setting, continuous schedules of reinforcement would involve giving the child a reward for every correct response. This could look like giving the child a token every time they answer a question correctly. And once a behavior gets going, you might move on to what's called an intermittent schedule of reinforcement, which means that you would give a token for every 3 or 4 correct responses. And you continue to fade out the schedule in that way, since in the real world, people don't typically get reinforcement for every good thing that they do. It'd be so lovely if they did, but that's not how things work. Now, I specifically want to cultivate my book writing habit. So for me, the ultimate reinforcer is having the book written, published, and in my hand. Now, as per my track record, it takes me a year to write, edit, rewrite, and publish a book. So ultimately, my reinforcement schedule is once a year when I hit that publish button on Kindle Direct Publishing. Now, that is way, way too delayed if I want to cultivate a regular habit. I need to start off with some sort of daily reinforcement schedule if I really want to get this behavior off the ground consistently and be writing every single day. So I could tie in some sort of reinforcement for writing a certain number of words every day, such as I get a bar of chocolate after completing the necessary word count, or I get to watch a short episode on Netflix, or just do something that is rewarding, feasible, and sustainable to do on a regular basis. Or I could also use the PREMAC principle, which is a technical ABA term, which states that the more preferred behaviors or behaviors that you are more likely to engage in will reinforce those less desired behaviors or the behaviors that you're less likely to engage. In this context, I might write 500 words, which is the less probable, more difficult behavior, but then I could post about this little accomplishment on social media, which is the more probable, higher preferred behavior. So the higher preferred, more probable behavior of posting about my accomplishment is reinforcing the less preferred, less probable behavior. And you can check out my author Instagram and author TikTok if you're interested to see what I get up to over there. The handle is the same on both platforms, and it's just author Nicole Plumridge. Moving on to the next point, and that is currently there's no behavior momentum in place. So a bit of background on my routine. Basically, I spend all day with my son since I'm a stay-at-home mom and he barely naps. He's a terrible napper. So all my time is pretty much his time during the day. In the evening, I put my son down to bed, maybe make dinner. And then from there, I just expect myself to switch into writing mode, which honestly for me is very hard to do. Behavior momentum involves doing easy tasks first to get yourself motivated and in the flow of a task, and then to slowly build up and incorporate more difficult tasks. In a clinical setting, if you're trying to build up, let's say, compliance with the client, you might want to give easy instructions first that they can follow through with, such as touch your nose, touch your arm, give me five, and then throw in a more difficult compliance instruction, such as color this picture, if the task is to color a picture. So in my writing context, I need to incorporate easier tasks to get my headspace into the creative writing zone. And I was thinking about this, and one way that I can actually do this is by reading, since reading inspires me to write. So I was thinking I could read two or three pages of a book I like, and then transition to writing my book. And that would just help me kind of bridge the baby caring mental mode that I'm in to something that's a different activity and uses different parts of my brain, essentially. Now, the next point I'm going to talk about is a difficult one for me to overcome, and that is dealing with competing contingencies. So competing contingencies are all of the other things I could be doing where I'd be accessing reinforcement quicker than the reinforcement I would access through writing. So some of the obvious competing contingencies would be the infamous Netflix and chill. By binging on Netflix, I would access immediate sensory reinforcement through the sensations of relaxing and the visual experience of watching the show. I would access escape from work and task demands. I would gain access to desirable tangible items, in this case, the TV. And in the immediate environment, this would be preferable to me sitting down at my desk, forcing my brain to think and squeeze out words onto the laptop. That's why it's important to tie in short and long-term goals, as well as the reinforcement I would access through achieving those short and long-term goals. And these reinforcers need to be strong enough to compete with the reinforcement of the Netflix chill and binging on a series. In a clinical setting, we would want the reinforcement or the reinforcers that we deliver to a client to be more powerful than the reinforcer of the maladaptive behavior. So let's say that the child acts silly and flops on the floor in order to access escaping work. So we might provide exciting looking tokens, fun activities, lots of praise, trips to the playground as rewards for completing the tasks. So these rewards should be more motivating for the child than the desire to flop and escape work. Another point that is linked with what I just talked about is response effort involved in the task. So if we look at Netflix and chill, the response effort is minimal. All you have to do is pick up the remote, turn the TV on, and collapse on the couch. Not much involved. When looking at book writing, the response effort is much, much higher. Even before the writing actually begins, I need to get my laptop out, set everything up, open all the necessary pages and files. I need to go back to any kind of research I was doing for the book. I need to recollect my thoughts, and only then can I start writing. Something that I've been doing lately to help reduce the response effort and reduce the number of steps involved is to make notes on my phone throughout the day of little reminders of things I need to do, ideas I need to research, and storylines that I want to follow up on. Another thing to help minimize response effort is to ensure that everything is set up prior to starting a writing session. So before putting my son down to sleep, I could take 5 minutes to do my setup, and when I come back from putting him down for the night, my setup is ready for me to just sit down and get typing. In relation to the clinical setting, especially when trying to build up a behavior, it's important to make sure that the task is as easy as possible for the client. So let's look at an example of a child hitting to access escape. So if hitting gets the child a break from a work task quickly, then the child will continue to hit. If you expect the child to say something like, "Excuse me, can I have a break now, please?" instead of hit, then that might not happen, since that entire phrase of "excuse me, can I have a break now, please?" involves a higher response effort than the hitting does. So in such a case, I might have a break card placed on the table at all times when this client is doing tabletop work. So the response effort to simply tap the card, as opposed to hit me, should, if not be easier, at least be the same, and result in a break from work, which hitting behavior would not. Once the appropriate behaviour has been built up, as a therapist, you can start increasing the response effort for the appropriate break request. Now, a very crucial point, and one that is possibly overlooked, is having an accountability partner when trying to build or even break a habit. Let me explain what I mean by that. When it comes to behaviour change, behaviour interventions, habit formation, it is important for someone else, not only you, to hold you accountable. It is extremely hard, and I say this from experience, to stay self-motivated and to monitor and reward your own behavior. It's important to involve someone else in your plan to help them motivate you and cheer you on. Essentially, in the clinical setting, we, the therapists, are the accountability partners to our clients. We are their biggest cheerleaders. We celebrate their wins with loads of enthusiasm, and that helps to keep them motivated to do their tasks and move towards independence. With my writing, it's all on me. Especially as an indie author, my deadlines are all self-imposed, my release dates, everything is based on what I'm devising for myself. And while it's great that I've gone this far by myself, I feel in order to continue, I need to essentially recruit an accountability partner. In the literary world, this could be in the form of a beta reader, so that is someone who reads manuscripts before they are published. It could be a critique partner, so someone who reviews your work and you review theirs. I could join literary circles or clubs where we all keep each other motivated as a group. So these are things I need to look into doing to help keep the motivation up. Now, my final point is a somewhat obvious one, and one that has been talked about a lot, and I'm sure everyone has heard of it. However, it's extremely relevant in ABA, in habit formation, behavior change, and my desire to build up a daily writing practice. And that is to create SMART goals. So the goals must be specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time-bound. In ABA, when creating clinical objectives for clients, we must ensure that the objectives are specific in nature. So an example would be they have to answer 10 social questions as part of their social skills learning objective. They have to be measurable. So let's say they need to attain 80% or higher for the questions to be considered mastered. There has to be a time frame. So in this example, the goal might be to meet this objective by the end of the quarter. They also have to be attainable. So we decide whether something could be attainable for a child through running various assessments with them prior to setting the objective. So we don't set objectives out of thin air or based on skills that they quote unquote should have by this age. We run various assessments relating to language, social skills, physical dexterity, so that could be fine and gross motor skills, academics, and so much more. And then based on their current level, we go by a framework and see what the next skill up is. We then test how well they can perform that skill, so aka collect baseline data for the technical ABA people out there. And if the baseline data shows that they are not at mastery level criteria, we then select that skill to train and work on with the client. We also make sure that the skills are relevant. So again, we're not just picking skills out of nowhere. The skills have to be age appropriate and something that is important to the child to help them function independently. This can also be referred to as a social validity. So we want the skills to help improve the client's quality of life and be relevant in their social and familial context. Now, I think I told this story before on a podcast episode where I thought it was important to teach a 6-year-old child to eat with a fork and knife during lunchtime at school, because he would eat with his hands, he was extremely messy, all the other kids were using cutlery, so I thought it was an appropriate skill to target. When I brought this up at a parent meeting, they were not happy at all with this skill, because at home, no one ate with cutlery, they all ate with their hands, so for them, it was something that was totally irrelevant, and something that I probably should have chatted with the parents about beforehand, and before setting this as an objective. And obviously, after having a conversation with the parents, I removed this from the child's program. Back to writing, simply by setting up specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time-bound short and long-term goals, I believe I'll be able to hinge my success and reinforcement onto something that's more tangible than simply the finished product of a book once a year. And by having these goals, I'd be able to take data and track my progress, which are also key components in behavior intervention plans. They actually say that if you're not taking data, you're not doing ABA. That is how important and crucial it is to take data and to track progress. And in my context, it can also help me appreciate the small wins and celebrate those. So for instance, I could say that I want to write 500 words, that's specific and it's measurable, every day for 2 months, that's time bound. And 500 words for me is not something that is unattainable. I can definitely do that. It's not too hard. And obviously writing a book is relevant. So that's in the relevant context. And you can see how saying that I want to write 500 words every day for 2 months would be a better goal than, let's say, I want to write for 15 minutes a day. Because what could end up happening if I was going with the second goal, just writing 15 minutes a day, is I could stare at a blank screen for 15 minutes, barely write a word, but if I had simply sat there for the full 50 minutes, I could consider that a writing session according to my objective and my criteria. So that's why it's so important to write clear, concise goals and objectives. While I believe there are so many more behavioral concepts and principles that I could tie into this episode, I think I'll stop there. Otherwise, I could probably just go on forever. I'm thinking of doing a little writing or habit update kind of process on my stories over on the Psych Minds podcast Instagram page. So do let me know if that's something that you'd be interested in seeing from me. I believe that could be a way of holding myself accountable and could also motivate me and keep me going with the writing process. But let me know if that's something that you'd be interested in. And also, I'd love your feedback on how you found this more personal approach to ABA and the principles of behavior. I must say I enjoyed recording it and will definitely try to stick to my own intervention to build up this writing habit of mine. Now, I would love to hear from you. So are there any habits that you're trying to cultivate? Are there any that you're trying to stop? And as always, you can let me know what your biggest takeaway message from this episode is by screenshotting the episode and sharing it over on Instagram, tagging Psych Minds Podcast. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode and found it valuable in some way. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode. While it can take several hours to create with the scripting, recording, and editing involved, it only takes a minute to rate, review, and subscribe. These things help the podcast out so much, and I'd be so grateful if you could do any one of them. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed the show, and I look forward to connecting with you in an upcoming episode.